You are listening to the Fresh Take Network.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful Formula One fans out there. We're going to do things a little differently this time. We should be talking about the Sochi Grand Prix. Any of you that don't know about that, Sochi is in Russia. The Russian Grand Prix should have been this weekend, but because of the political climate and because Russia did invade the Ukraine, they had a massive meeting and all motorsports, including Formula One, Formula 2, 3, electric, and GP racing, which is motorcycle racing, has officially been banned for now and probably till the end of eternity from Russia. So the wonderful track that is very fantastic and very good to watch in Sochi going to be absolutely 100% useless because they are no longer racing in Russia at all ever again. So with that being said, this is going to be an extended Hot Topics version before the Singapore Grand Prix because there is a ton to catch up on that you guys do need to know about, a lot of good information, a lot of information that will help you decide on your fantasy drafts like I'm in on F1 TV and F1.com. And that being said, if you are hearing my voice, my name is Kelsey, and you are definitely listening to the newest episode of F101. Well, let's start off the Hot Topics with the newest Hot Topic, and that is Yuki Tsunoda re-signing with AlphaTauri for one more year for the 2023 season. Now, to me, it kind of sounds like, and it feels like, since they only signed Yuki Tsunoda to a one-year contract through the 2022-2023 season, they don't really have much of a choice in this pace. They don't want to pick up Daniel Ricciardo, which to me makes absolutely no sense. Why would you keep what I would consider still a rookie in training in Yuki Tsunoda, and why would you keep him and pass on Daniel Ricciardo? Granted, he hasn't had the best season of his career, but not totally his own fault. But when you look at Yuki Tsunoda, it doesn't make any sense. Granted, he's ridiculously cheaper compared to Daniel Ricciardo. It just doesn't make any sense. Why would you keep him when he's not really producing the points that you had expected him to? This is his second year in Formula One. And to this point, he only has 11 points. He's sitting 16th in the driver's standings. It's not worth it for me to pass up someone like Daniel Ricciardo or pass up, you know, some of the former F1 stars that are in the wings in F2 or, you know, Formula E. You know, Hulkenberg comes to mind. You've got some really great drivers that are just sitting in the wings waiting to come back again, kind of sitting in idle, hoping that someone's contract doesn't get picked up, and that they do. But keeping Yuki Tsunoda, I mean, he was an F4 champ in 2018. That was his second season, so he was, you know, not just out of the rookie season for Formula 4. Formula 3, which would be the following season, he got 67 points in 16 races, then immediately promoted to F2 in 2020. And then after that, he had a couple of races. He got some extra points. He wowed the people at AlphaTauri and essentially Red Bull, and they brought him up for 2020 and 2021. And then 21 to 22, this is his second season in Formula 1. In my opinion, I think he should have stayed in Formula 2 and Formula 3 a little bit longer. Yeah, it looked like he dominated Formula 3 and Formula 2, but it didn't mature him enough for Formula 1. He didn't really have a whole lot of extended use of Formula 1 cars. He did a couple of practice races. He put in some laps to get your super license for Formula 1. Once you get all your points to make it into Formula 1, you have to do 300 kilometers is your bare minimum distance in a Formula 1 car for them to even consider you, you know, Formula One ready. And he barely put in the 300K that he needed to. Like, he just squeaked under. AlphaTauri going, sweet, you're going to replace the driver that we have now, and we expect you to swim. Well, he kind of has and he kind of hasn't at the same time. He does have good days. He does have bad days, just like everybody else. But what worries me the most, and I don't see him maturing a whole lot further than he is now, is that he's so overly emotional sometimes that he doesn't quite understand how the car is supposed to work, or it seems like he doesn't understand how Formula One works, or he doesn't understand the tactics that they're talking about. Granted, I'm sure there's a massive language barrier between him and his engineers and his pit crew, but that excuse can only go for so long. If you don't understand the car and you don't understand the tactics, you just don't understand, period. And it's his second season. He's admitted that he doesn't necessarily like putting in the physical work, which to me, like training in the off season and making sure that you stay in shape, which to me just sounds like you don't want to put in the effort mentally either. You want to drive, you want to collect your money, and you're hoping that it comes to you naturally. Well, this is not exactly sport where things come to you naturally all the time. You have to put the work in, you have to do your studying, you have to put in that grind, you have to go through the grind to make sure that you can get the best out of your car. And it just doesn't seem like Yuki Tsunoda is willing to put in the work. It's almost like he's sitting on his laurels and look what I did in F4, F3, and F2. You promoted me so fast because I'm such a wonderful driver. But then you look like a child when you freak out on the radio, on national television, and online and social media when you're screaming at your engineer for something you did or something you don't understand. You sound like a child out there. You are a child among men. So Yuki, I mean, he's got an extra year, which is great. I think this is definitely his make or break season, not only with AlphaTauri, but in Formula One. Everybody knows what kind of personality he is and what kind of temper he has. So if he doesn't perform in 2023, I don't see him coming back at all. I think it's going to be a very short stint for him. I think he'll stay, you know, in the reserve driver wings, maybe that, you know, if somebody gets sick, then he'll come in, or if there's, you know, an opportunity to get in some more simulator time or development program, that's what he's going to do. But I don't see him going past 2023. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, it would be great to see him stick around. He would be a valuable driver if he can mature enough to become one. But as for right now, Yuki Tsunoda has signed for the 2023 season with AlphaAtari. So I really hope that he will, you know, pull his bootstraps up and he'll become the driver that he knows and that everybody knows that he can be. Moving on, next topic. Ding dong, Latifi is gone. It has been officially announced that Latifi will no longer be driving in F1 with Williams after the 2022 season. You know, you got that employee that you work with that you sit there and you go, how have you kept your job for this long when there's so many other people who want your job? It's kind of like you're rich, but you're useless. Well, that would be, in my opinion, that is what Nicholas Latifi's driving career has been. He brings in massive sponsorship money, which is great for the team that he signs with. But as of right now, he's 21st out of 22 drivers. The only reason why he's not last is because when Nyck de Vries came in, he scored more points than him. And the only reason why he isn't dead last is that he got four more laps in and he finished a race where Nico Hülkenberg didn't finish the race that he essentially temped in. He was a temporary driver for one race due to another sick driver. But that's the only reason why Hülkenberg was last is because he didn't complete more laps than Latifi. Like, this is embarrassing. And he's gone. We've got six more races, and Williams doesn't have to be embarrassed about one of their two drivers anymore. They can have the confidence that both drivers will actually finish the race on a consistent basis. Granted, Latifi only had three DNFs all season. But the most humiliating part is that the highest he's placed all year is 12th. And that was way back July 3rd for the Great Britain Grand Prix. That's horrible for a driver who, it's not your rookie season. You know what you're doing. You've put in the time. You've put in the effort. You were graduated from Formula 4 up to 3, up to 2, and up to Formula 1. I think, again, kind of like Yuki Tsunoda, very, very fast. You showed extreme promise in the lower ranks, which is great. But I don't think you were given the opportunity to mature and hone your driving skills in the lower ranks, which is not Latifi's fault at all. Everyone thought he was great when he came in. He brings in massive sponsorship money. He's going to be fantastic. He's going to be getting points and podiums and this and that. And Williams, at some point, I'm sure, thought that they found their golden goose. Well, that golden goose has definitely not been laying golden eggs. He's been laying something else. But the end of the 2022 season, Latifi is officially done with Williams. And in my opinion, he is done in Formula One. Everybody sees that he doesn't quite belong. I can see him in Formula E, potentially IndyCar, something that's a little less strenuous from my point of view and something that requires a little bit less thinking on an individual's part where the team essentially knows the plan, do this, stay straight, don't screw up, and you'll finish the race. I think that's more of Latifi's driving skill right now. I think some time away from Formula One to maybe gain some other experience in different forms of motor racing would definitely benefit him more than just struggling at the bottom of the bottom of the ladder in Formula One, being the butt of all jokes and just being like, oh, you know what? Never mind. It's going to be Latifi, or drivers being extremely nervous around him when they have to pass him going, well, is Latifi going to take me out? Is he paying attention? Can his car even make it? You know, it's just that uncertainty that Formula One and the drivers on the grid just really don't need at this point. It was definitely a long time coming. I think it could have come a lot sooner than this. I think Williams should have not let Latifi decide that he was done because he came out with the statement first. I think Williams just should have fired him mid-season like they do, or it has been done in the past before. You know what? You're not working. Let's pull in a substitute driver, even if it's on a last-minute call. I mean, get Nyck de Vries out there again. Give him a half a season of experience. It can only do him better, and you won't have to suffer with Latifi for the rest of the season. Pay him out for his contract, however much that would have been, and just look to the future. Because, I mean, at this point, Latifi's gone, which is great, and Williams' stock and their future, from my point of view, is only going to go up from here. It definitely can't get any worse. Well, I mean, Latifi could come back, but besides that, Williams' stock is looking up. Their future's looking a lot brighter than it was now. So Latifi is gone after the 2022 season. Thank God the F1 gods have listened and they have spoken, and he is done. All right, moving on. The FIA has also made a statement on the Colton Herta super license, we'll call it, saga. For those of you who missed my last podcast, which you should go back and listen to, I might add, Colton Herta is an American IndyCar driver who is in line, let's say, to inherit the next AlphaTauri seat in Red Bull. Now, you have to have so many points on your super license to essentially qualify to show that you have the experience and you have the necessary skills to drive in a higher performance car. Normally, when you go from IndyCar, you don't automatically jump into F1. Just because the setup of the cars, the horsepower, the speed, the track, all this kind of stuff is vastly different to IndyCar circuits and the way their car is made up, period. I mean, the F1 cars are heavier than IndyCars. They're set up 100% differently, you know, all those sorts of stuff. Normally, you would go to F2 for potentially a season, maybe to get your feet underneath you. Also, do more practice driving and simulator driving with F1 teams that are you're either under contract with or they're interested in you. Colton Herta was trying to, I don't want to say bypass that, but he was trying to play the system where he is, in the FIA's mind and F1 and all the teams in the paddock, he is the golden goose to the US and North American market. He is very well known in the Indy circuit. He is very well known in North America, period, for his racing ability and his racing pedigree. His dad also was a professional driver back in the day, so he's kind of got that prestige pedigree behind him. His dad was won quite a few things back in the day. I believe it was through IndyCar, and I think his dad drove a little bit of F1 back in the day. But the FIA and AlphaTauri and F1 was looking at Herta to be like, hey, you know what? We have an American driver on the grid now, because now there's officially three races in the States. It's a massive marketing opportunity to be like, hey, it's not just Europeans that are on the circuit. We can get some North American guys in there. We can get a couple Americans in there to hang out with the Canadians. But the FIA has officially ruled that he doesn't have enough points, that he does have to do one more season in IndyCar, and he has to get, I think he's short 10 points to get his supercar license. So, which essentially means that he has to kick ass for the rest of this season and definitely at least the first half of the IndyCar season for anybody to even look at him point wise. The way his trajectory is going for the rest of the IndyCar season is that he might make the 8 points, but he may not. He's kind of dropping off at the end of the season. Kind of understand why, just because you've got all this extra media attention, you've got all this extra drama around you and you potentially going to F1 halfway through your season or near the end of your season in IndyCar and halfway through F1. So hopefully he'll be able to refocus and he needs to do much better to get those points. If not, it's just going to take him longer and longer and longer to actually get his supercar license, just to get those points, just to make it into F1. And by that time, you know, who knows, his shelf life could be totally done. He could be, you know, last week's news where there's a new American Golden Boy coming up that would bring in more sponsorship money and more viewers. That's definitely the thing that Huerta doesn't want to happen. So as of right now, Huerta is stuck in IndyCar. There are some possibilities where he can get those points that he needs by the beginning of next year's F1 season. There is kind of the equivalent of summer school for moto racing. There are smaller leagues. They're out in Germany and Switzerland and throughout Europe. You do have a set of races. You've got tracks and all this kind of stuff to do. The unfortunate thing is that they don't have the budget of IndyCar or F1 or GP racing. So just because Huerta signs up and he's got a team doesn't mean that there'll be enough teams to actually run the race. So in that case, you're wasting precious training time for IndyCar, hoping that you can get other guys to join essentially the summertime league that you want them to join just so you to get the points. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense for him to go in that direction, in my opinion, but time will tell to see what Huerta does. I see him sticking with IndyCar until he gets his points. It's just going to be a matter of how long will it take him to get those points. He does get supercar license points when he does do full practice testing with other Formula One teams. It's 1 point per full practice event, essentially. So the best thing he can do is get 6 more points because there's 6 more races left on the schedule. It's still going to leave him short, but it gives him a much better opportunity to score those points that he needs in IndyCar next season to get into Formula One a lot faster, get his name out there, get the sponsorship money, and then everybody's laughing because they'll be rolling in that dough in the North American market. Since Drive to Survive on Netflix has come out, the market for and the demand essentially for North American drivers, especially in Formula One, has absolutely skyrocketed. They can't keep up with the demand. Like it's almost like they're panicking. Like they need to get somebody in Formula One now before the opportunity is totally gone. So I think this was a little bit of grasping its straws for Huerta, but hopefully that he will be able to do much better in IndyCar for the rest of the season, get those points, and hopefully we will see him in F1. Moving on. And this last section of the Hot Topics is probably going to be the most controversial slash majorly important for next season. The FIA has released the 2023 racing schedule, which would seem that it's not that big of a deal. You're racing here, you're racing there, you know where you're going, you know the time, the dates, all this kind of stuff. Except for they've added 2 extra races. They're now at a record for the first time ever in F1. They're up to 24 races, which doesn't seem that big of a deal. You've got 2 more races, which means it's like an extra 6 days on the calendar. What could possibly go wrong with that? Losing Russia for the near future, it's kind of like, okay, one of those races just replaces Russia. Well, not necessarily, because Sochi was on a rotating schedule anyway. So they do have a contract up until whatever it was, 2020, pick a number. But that wasn't necessarily meaning that they were going to be on the race schedule every single season, because Sochi was one of those tracks that was popular, but it wasn't, and it was almost too much work than it was worth for the ratings and for the drivers, so all that kind of stuff. So it kind of replaces it, but it kind of doesn't at the same time. And it does kind of throw a lot of other races and a lot of other facts into play and messes a few things up. Plus, even though all 10 teams voted on it, it was a unanimous decision. The drivers are not happy about it, which means, and that tells me, that not necessarily all teams are listening to all of their drivers. So let's give you a quick breakdown, and I'll try to keep this as absolutely straight as possible, but I guarantee nothing. So this year's schedule started on March 20th. They were in Bahrain. Okay. Next season, they are also in Bahrain, so that doesn't change, except for they're doing March 5th. So they are 15 days ahead, we'll call it ahead of schedule. And essentially the way that that goes is it just kind of keeps going. The next one for next season is Saudi Arabia for March 19th. This year was Saudi Arabia for March 27th, and so on and so forth. Australia is April 2nd. Next year, this year was April 10th. So there is a little bit of date discrepancy, which is fine. It shouldn't affect things that much. The races that they've added is China and Vegas. Now, Vegas is the big one. Vegas is the one that kind of screwed up everything from the beginning, because there's so much popularity, like I said, because of Drive to Survive on Netflix, that the US market is just blowing up, and they absolutely had to get another race on top of Texas and on top of Miami, because Miami was kind of a success, but it's on that tipping point of not doing so well. And, you know, or sorry, Miami was on the tipping point of not doing so well. Texas is definitely a staple. Texas is here to stay. So Miami, I do believe that for next season, it's going to be a make or break season for them. And then Vegas is the one that everybody absolutely is going to be paying the most attention to see how well the market loves them. So the other one is China. Now, this hasn't been, I don't think they've gone to China in quite a while. I'm not too sure on the specifics of that one, but it should be a very, very interesting race. Now, the China, it's in Shanghai, and that is April 16th. Now, normally, April 16th would be between the Australian Grand Prix and the Romanian Grand Prix. Well, they've thrown an extra one in there. They've essentially split it up, and they're in Azerbaijan next week or next year, just before Miami. So it is kind of screwing up a few things here and there. They've switched Romania to the 21st of May instead of the 24th of April. So there is a lot of hustle and bustle going around. Now, what that does by adding that extra race is that there's a few races that are a staple in the European market and for race fans. One comes to mind is a 24-hour of Le Mans race. That has been on the same weekend for the last 70 years. Well, because everything got moved down, now it's Spain, Monaco, and then Spain. Well, now they've had to move the 24-hour of Le Mans to July 1st and July 2nd. Now this, if there's an easy way to annoy people in the motorsport community, it is to mess with their tradition. Because before, there was almost a month and a half break between the Canadian Grand Prix and the British Grand Prix, which is where the 24-hour of Le Mans would normally take place. There's no such break anymore. It is definitely not that long. You've got from June 18th to July 2nd of next year now. So it's shorter, but it's not. It just, those 1 or 2 days that everything's moving, it's just totally, totally screwing things up. I think it's going to definitely be an experiment for 24 races for next season, but I don't know if F1 will be able to withstand the pressure from other organizations to keep the dates that they have. I don't think it's going to be worth it for them in the long run financially. Definitely, they're going to be losing some other races going to different tracks. I don't think it's worth it. I really don't think it is. 14 other races for next calendar season have to be rescheduled from their original dates. Like, there's people that book schedules or book holidays around these races. There's corporations that book major retreats and sponsorship dollars. And I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. So even if you're moving things 6 days, 4 days, 3 days, 2 days, it makes a major impact to all of these companies, including the workers that would normally set their schedule like clockwork. Hey, here's the schedule for the Grand Prix if you're a marshal, or travel schedules for airlines, all that kind of fun stuff. All of this now, I mean, it's not in total disarray, but there's some seriously unhappy people. And I do understand why. I mean, it's a big gamble that the FIA is taking. I do believe that this year they'll make the financial gains, but they're really going to have to revisit by the time they hit Abu Dhabi. It's going to be the last race of the season, which is 6 days later next year than it is this year. This year it is November 20th. Next year it's November 26th. Like, that's a long season. That's really long for any sport in general. That's a long season, especially if you have that much travel. Now, the FIA has stated that they're calling it a preliminary schedule. It did come out about a week ago. There hasn't been any changes to it so far, but I think the schedule that we have for the 2023 season, it's officially here to stay. This is what's going to happen. This will be the schedule for next year. If we lose a couple races, I don't think we're going to gain any, that's for damn sure, but it's really going to be a struggle and a grind for these guys just to make it to the end of the season. And definitely, now you got to think about it business-wise, if you're one of those teams that doesn't exactly have a massive budget, don't forget the budget for these teams, it's dropping supposedly to $138 million, but now you've added 2 extra races, you've added more traveling and all this kind of stuff. There's so many things that are in play that something's going to have to give for next season's schedule. And I don't know if it's going to be monetary. I don't know if it's going to be these guys are going to be too worn out, where you're going to see a lot more replacement drivers. You know, potentially we might see a couple of rookie replacements next season. You never know, just because these guys are going to get so worn out or you can't afford to run two cars and you have to run one car, or if the FIA and F1 come back going, you know what, with two extra races, there is an extra expense. Maybe we keep the budget at $145 million for next season just to see how it works out. I'm sure we're going to hear all of this stuff by the end of this season and during the off season before this schedule kicks in. But yeah, that could be some major potential growing pains, but 24 races next season. It's going to be, viewership wise, it's going to be great. I've got more races to watch. I've got more races to talk to you guys about. I have more opportunity to hear your guys' feedback, what you liked, what you didn't like about the season, who your favorite racer was. Do you like the same team as you did last year? Are you switching teams? Do you like this driver compared to next year's driver? All the sorts of stuff that adds the entertainment value. And I do think it'll bring the F1 community closer together, better conversation, more conversation. And I'm excited for 24 races. I'm not going to lie to you. It's just more opportunity to watch some more great racing. It's going to be exciting. Now, one of the races I did want to talk to you about that I'm most interested in, it's a bit of a repeat, is Vegas. So this is not the first time that Vegas has joined the F1 circuit. The last time they raced in F1, it was in the 1980s, but the U.S. didn't really understand the market and they didn't understand the need that Formula One had for a massive track. You can't just slap a track together and call it an F1 track and you're going to succeed and make millions of dollars. They did not understand that in the 1980s. And what I mean, they don't understand it, like they didn't understand it. It was in the parking lot of the Caesars Palace Casino and Hotel. It was absolutely atrocious. They didn't have an eighth of the fans that they're going to expect in Vegas next year. And the track was just absolutely horrible. If you want to laugh, if you're a race fan and you like, cringy things to look at in a good way, you should look up the 1980s Vegas track at Caesars Palace. It looked like someone put it together over the weekend and just kind of crossed their fingers and hoped that it would actually work. It's kind of embarrassing. But if you look at the racetrack they've got for next season, it's going down the new strip. It's going through New Vegas. It's going down Old Vegas. The only complaint that I do have is that when you look at European tracks, granted, they've been doing this a lot longer than the U.S. has. And even if you look at the Miami track and the Texas track, it looks like a Formula One track. You look at it and you go, yeah, that turn, this elevation, it's going to be a great race, this and that, this and that. That's what you expect in a Formula One track, even when you just look at the layout. When you look at enough layouts, you can kind of tell what's going to be interesting corners, 5 through 7, this chicane, that turn, this speed, blah, blah, blah. Granted, Vegas is trying this all over again, but doing it properly, and the track's already changed, they've added a few turns, an S turn and a chicane in the race for Vegas. Okay, that's fine to the track. It still looks like a pig lying down. There's not exactly a whole lot of innovation in the F1 track. Unfortunately, the reason for this is because it's another street track. Some of the drivers like this idea. Some of these drivers don't like the idea. I'm more along the side of I don't like so many track circuits. It kind of takes away from Formula One racing, in my opinion. I love seeing the established, 100% dedicated moto racing tracks. It does kind of take the extra guesswork just because street tracks get used so often just by regular traffic. It kind of takes the guesswork and it kind of takes some of the drama out of it when you have a dedicated Formula One track, but at the same time, you get better performance out of the cars, in my opinion. Now, I'm not saying that the Vegas track is going to be horrible. I'm not saying the track isn't going to be fast and it's not going to be amazing, but it's just another street track. Plus, they're going to have to shut down, three quarters of Vegas within the next year because Vegas is November 18th. I know it's still September, but still, they have just over a year to close down three quarters of Vegas a little bit at a time and they have to repave the strip. Is there any point in doing that now? Good luck repaving the entire strip and then keeping it in pristine condition until next November. It's the second last race. That ain't going to happen. So I'm sure that they're going to do a little bit of work here, a little bit of work there, and they're going to get the track in pristine condition. I don't doubt that. But what's it actually going to look like? What's it going to look like driving beside palm trees? They're not going to rip them out. Vegas is a tourist attraction. It's not a racing track, and they're trying to do both at the same time. Now, on that thought alone, yes, it is a tourist attraction, but at the same time, you have to do it realistically. So they've scheduled the track time, they've got the distance, all this kind of stuff, and they have modified the track itself. Okay, that's good. It's going to be more viewership, all this kind of stuff, blah, 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 more exciting race. The Vegas coordinators have officially come out and said what time the race is. In my opinion, the race is not that late, but all European fans are bitch, whining, and complaining. So if you didn't know, the race in Las Vegas on November 18th, and this is Vegas time, this is North American time, the race starts at 10 p.m. Bit of a late race for us, just because, you know, you're not going to get to bed till midnight, maybe one if you're like me, you like to watch the after race press conferences, and you'll find out the little things here and there. The race starts at 10, which generally means, if my math is correct, that in Europe the race will be on TV live at 6 or 7 a.m. in the morning. And F1 fans out in Europe are not happy. They're complaining it's too early, it's not an acceptable time. Well, guys, guess what? For all of us that don't live in Europe, half of the races that you broadcast, we're up at 5 a.m. We're up at 6 a.m. Hell, there's some races where you go to bed at your proper time, you get up at midnight or 1 to watch the race live, and then you go back to bed and go to work. I think one race out of 24, the Europeans can get up a little early to enjoy the race with their coffee and their breakfast, and they will get over it. That's just my opinion. But if it's any consolation, the one thing that the Europeans can, you know, smile about is when they find out, and I cannot find right now, I cannot find official ticket prices, but there has been some articles because the MGM has bought up a ton of tickets themselves just because they own every casino on the track. So when you look at European ticket prices, you're looking at like 120 euros, you know, the British Grand Prix, sometimes you're looking at like a couple hundred pounds. So it's not unrealistic. In some of the packages, you're looking at about, you know, some are 10,000 pounds, but it's like the highest of the high kind of packages, private rooms, private viewing, suite, dinner, this and that, all that kind of jazz with flights. The MGM management has deemed it appropriate, and they think it's a fantastic idea because everything has to be bigger and badder in Vegas, that there are some ticket package prices that are, and I'm not making this up, and I double check this, $100,000 American. What the hell are you going to get for $100K at an F1 race? You better be able to walk into the pits, sit in the car, and hang out with whatever driver you want for $100K for 3 days. That is absolutely astronomical, and it's unacceptable. I know Formula One is an expensive sport. I've looked at tickets, and I can only imagine the actual math and the price behind it. I throw around prices like the budget's $138 million, $140 million, you know, this and that. But it, those numbers, I mean, they're easy to say, but they're still unfathomable. But when you get package pricing of $100,000, I'm never, ever going to be able to afford that. That's almost a house. But to their backpedaling credit, the Vegas management has said they're trying to keep it affordable. There's no trying to keep it affordable. You make it affordable. You find extra places for the grandstands. Speaking of which, where are you going to put the grandstands? If it's a track circuit, where the hell are you? You're not going to put bleachers in the Bellagio fountain when it goes off. Like, it's just such a major spectacle. Like, you're not going to put grandstands between the lanes where the palm trees are to watch the race go by. Like, they don't really seem to have thought about us normal people that want to go, that can't afford $100,000 packages for 3 days. Like, that is absolutely ridiculous. I know they're going to lose some businesses through the hotel and casino because, you know, the rooms are going to be booked for people who want to go see the race, and they're not going to have as much tourism from us normal Joe Blows. But at the same time, you're going to get more tourism because F1's in town. If you can find and pull your head out of your ass and not think so much about the money, but think about the fans and get proper seating and get proper package prices. Maybe you throw in a hotel, doesn't have to be the luxury suite, but maybe you throw in a couple sets of tickets and a hotel room with flight for easily 5,000 American. Those would disappear in an absolute heartbeat. It's not rocket science. It has to be accessible for everybody. But at $100,000 for top tier package pricing, and you know that's a lie, you know it's going to skyrocket from there when they see the kind of demand that's going to happen. It'll go from 100,000 to 120,000 to 125,000 to, you know, probably upwards of, you know, when scalpers or, you know, a businessman wants to flip his money, like $200,000 packages. Why not? Why, it's the sky's the limit. Why not? It's F1. It's America. It's the Vegas. Let's do it. Why not? I see that escalating and getting out of control extraordinarily fast for ticket pricing in Vegas. So I think sooner rather than later, yeah, they still have over a year, but they need to bring back the realism to Formula One, and they need to bring back the average. I don't want to say, and I'm not saying average in a bad way, but they need to bring back the average viewer that watches every race week in and week out, and they make a yearly trip to Vegas to watch Formula One, and it's acceptable. The pricing, it doesn't have to be cheap. They don't have to be losing money, but it has to be acceptable and accessible for everybody who is able to go. I would love to go to Vegas, but at the prices that I have a feeling that these tickets are going to be at, and packages and all this kind of stuff, I'll never make it to Vegas because cash is king. And I mean, Lewis Hamilton has said it. Max Verstappen has said it. In Formula One, cash is king. And the more cash you can make, the bigger the king you are. So Vegas is going to be very interesting. I think Vegas needs to be a lot cheaper than what they're advertising, or if they're going to change the ticket prices, don't wait until the packages are available. Make a statement going, hey, we rethought it. Yeah, the upper class platinum double diamond VIP packages will be $100,000, but we've got weekend tickets for $500, $300, $350 American. Make it accessible like everywhere else, like in Texas, like in Miami, like Montreal. Make it acceptable where you're not going to break the budget, you're not going to break the bank, and families can actually go. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. So why would you take that away from most people just because you want to make more money? Anyways, that's Vegas. I don't want to get too upset about it, but we'll see what they do. We'll see how intelligent they are when it comes to their advertising for Vegas and their prices. So moving on, a couple more topics for the hot topics for this week. When I introduced you guys and some of you first-time viewers to Formula One, I had informed you about those black, what looked like mini sleeping bags that sit over the tires. Then I told you and I informed you that they were electric heating blankets for the tires to keep the tires in, you know, pristine, optimal conditions for the most grip for the type of tires that you have. That they had turned the temperature down this season compared to last season for the tires because they were a different compound, they were bigger, lower profile, all that kind of fun stuff. Well, Pirelli and the FIA have, there's been some insider information that was a little leaked. I don't know how happy some of these executives are, but they are seriously talking about and considering and almost signing plans with Pirelli that Pirelli is coming out with another new set of compounds for next season for the tires, but they are taking away and totally 100% eliminating the heated blankets from the tires. So now it's going to be closer to IndyCar, Formula One, or not Formula One, Indy, NASCAR, and all those sorts of things where you don't have heated tires. Pirelli had such an issue with bigger, low-profile tires for the first half of the season. I don't see this being a fantastic idea for them next season. Yes, you figured out the size, you figured out some new compounds, but you're almost starting from scratch now when you have a tire that you're eliminating any heating elements 100% for grip. Now, does this mean that it's just the heating blankets? Or are they going to sit out? I don't want to say in the elements, but they're just going to sit there on the racks at room temperature, as it were. What kind of compounds are they going to come up with? Is it actually going to work? I think it will to a certain extent, but I also think they're going to have major issues at the beginning of the season yet again. It's a great idea to say we're eliminating costs, so you don't have to have these electric blankets, you don't have to have all this extra technology, we're going to take care of the research, we're going to spend the money, blah, blah, blah. But they're just announcing this year for next year. Now, how long they've been in development for tires that don't need heated blankets, I have absolutely no idea, kind of above my pay grade. But at the same time, if this is just somebody's bright idea this year to save cost caps, don't announce it for next season. Wait a season or two with testing and then come out and announce, hey, we've come up with these new compounds, we're proud to do this, blah, 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 environment, blah, blah, whatever you want to, however you want to spin it. But for you to come out and say next year we're developing a brand new compound, they're making it sound like it's from scratch, a brand new compound, you don't need heated blankets, it's going to be much more affordable for the teams. Yet we have never seen any articles or heard of any other news at all that they're even trying these out, that they're testing them out, period, except for what I've been able to find 2-3 weeks ago. I think this is going to be, I don't want to see a massive catastrophe, but I don't see this going very well for Pirelli in the first half of the season, or they're just going to scrap it and be like, hey, you know what? We're just going to kind of ignore what we said a couple months ago, and we're going to keep the heated blankets. You know, who knows at this point, but I see it working and I see it not. The only way that I can see them for the gray area for the teams, at least, is like, we don't have heated blankets, but think of a gigantic cupboard where you hold your spices and your cereal, that kind of stuff, but make it for tires. And that itself is heated. So you're pulling the tires out warm. They're going to cool off with the air temperature. You put them on the car, off they go. It's not technically a heated blanket. They're technically not, you know, technically they will be at room temperature and ready for the tires and ready for the cars. I kind of see that's the only gray area that these guys can go around. But I do think it's a little bit premature for Pirelli to state that the tires that they'll be using next year will not need heated blankets at all, that it's just going to be regular tires, and the compound is that much more self-sufficient that they doesn't need the extra help for grip. But we'll see what happens. We'll see if they retract their statement, and we'll see if it even works, or if I'm just absolutely talking out of my butt and none of this ever actually comes to fruition for next season. But only time will tell. And I'm hoping that I'm not wrong on that one. All right, last but not least, and this is a precursor to the Singapore Grand Prix. I've got some math for you. As we all know, that Max Verstappen is way, way, way in the lead for when it comes to drivers' points. Constructors is pretty much wrapped up. Red Bull's won this, even if both Max and Sergio just start sucking. I mean, that's not going to happen, first of all, but the Constructors is pretty much wrapped up. And I have your math for Max to win the 2022 Formula One Drivers' Championship. And the math is actually pretty simple, but that being said, I don't think it's very realistic for at least the first three races. But this is how it goes. In Singapore, if Max gets first, if and when, and he gets the fastest lap, so that gives him 26 points. Okay, keep that in mind. His closest competitor, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari, needs to place ninth or lower. Sergio Perez needs to get fourth or lower, which is going to be an easy one. If something happens to Leclerc and he doesn't finish the race, it's going to be team orders. Perez, you have to get fourth or lower. We're sorry, buddy. We'll give you, you know, we'll let you win Mexico or something like that. They'll make it up to him, but it's going to be definite team orders to be fourth or lower, just so Max can win and tie it up. And George Russell has to finish second or lower. Now, this math is pretty simple. This math is very simple. Even if Max doesn't get the fastest lap, Leclerc still has to be fourth or lower. Sergio has to be fifth or lower. Russell has to be third or lower. Just that's how the math works out. It's simple math, but in my opinion, it's very unrealistic math. The way that Ferrari has, I mean, they still screw themselves over when it comes to strategy, but the reliability of the car is much better than it was at the beginning of the season. Now, I can see Charles Leclerc, and everybody knows this math, I can see him almost not being a rebel child all of a sudden, but I can definitely see him ignoring team orders to pit when he doesn't think it's necessary, or to get new tires, or when he doesn't think it's necessary, or to slow down, or to whatever the consequences or the circumstance may be. I can see Charles thinking more for himself just so Max doesn't win this coming up weekend. I mean, it would be a massive, massive victory for Max if he could wrap up the championship with five races left. Like, that's insane. That would leave, in this case, if he wins Singapore, that would leave the Japanese, the United States, Mexican, Brazilian, and Abu Dhabi. It would essentially mean nothing for anybody else. Max has won. The math is officially in. If he wins Singapore and all this comes to fruition, no one's going to watch. No one's really going to care. It's going to be the fight for second and third, and then it's going to be the fight for constructors' points, which is still important. Don't get me wrong. You still get millions of dollars in sponsorships and extra this, extra that. But the intensity of the rest of the season would just be kind of like meh. So Max, I do still think is going to win Singapore. I really do. I really think he's just going to kill it. I don't think he's going to get the fastest lap, but I do think he's going to win. I absolutely do not see Charles Leclerc getting ninth or lower unless some kind of catastrophe, like maybe Latifi hits him just because he doesn't care anymore. Perez fourth or lower, man, he's on a roll. I don't see him getting fourth or lower again unless something catastrophic happens. Russell, on the other hand, I mean, he is still driving Mercedes. They are getting better, but they're going to have to find some serious time in Singapore for him to not keep his, you mean, just to make him part of the conversation. Like if he wins, that kind of changes the math 100%, and the game is really on. But it's essentially this same kind of math for Singapore and Japan. At least if Max wins Singapore and Japan, I believe, if my math is correct, that he only has to get fifth or higher, or fifth or lower. He just essentially has to finish the United States Grand Prix October 23rd in Austin, Texas, and he wins anyway. So it's either going to be six races left or essentially three races left. But that's your math. Max has got to come in first with the fastest lap. Leclerc's got to get ninth or less. Perez has got to get fourth or less, and Russell has to get second or less. I mean, the Russell thing is the most realistic math there. Perez, I mean, it depends on what his car is feeling like. That's kind of a little bit more the next stage of realism of other than Russell getting second or last. But ninth for Leclerc or last, I mean, the consistency is so there in the Ferrari right now. He just needs to think for himself, think like Sights, and he will finish higher than ninth. And it's going to be game on for at least one, maybe two more races. I do hope that Leclerc keeps it close and just makes it makes Max work for it just a little bit more. I do feel like Max is still going to win the championship, but he does need that little bit of a push. And I think Leclerc is definitely going to be there to do that. So that is the extended F101 hot takes this weekend. Don't forget the Singapore Grand Prix is this weekend, September 30th and to October 2nd. And it is a night race in Singapore, just because the temperatures there are so hot. So look for the race to be fast. Look for there to be a lot of action. There's a ton of passing on that track. It is definitely one of those ones that you do not want to miss. That if you do miss, but you do want to see it, stay off of social media. Go home. When you've recorded it, go home, grab a beer, grab some popcorn, sit on the couch. You will definitely enjoy the Singapore Grand Prix. So until then, my name is Kelsey, and I will see you on race day.
This episode is brought to you by Jam Dinners. Jam Dinners is a food blog turned small shop local to YYC and the Airdrie area. They curate small batch spice blends that are gluten and addictive free. Their focus is on impactful ingredients at reasonable prices. Their blends range from savory options like dill dip to spice blends like their buffalo wing dry rub, to sweet options such as their delicious margarita rimmer or cinnamon spice blend. No matter your preference, Jam Dinners most certainly has a blend for you.
You're listening to the Fresh Take Network.